Coming up, the Kentucky gay marriage license controversy. We talk to two experts about whether religious freedom can trump obeying the law. Also, the Battle of Bears Ears, Utah. Lucky Severson reports on residents who want to use some of the land that 25 Native American tribes say is sacred.
We're going to leave it the same, keep it, protect it.
And a new Reformed Jewish prayer book with many influences, just in time for the high holidays.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. This week, European nations continued grappling with the massive influx of migrants fleeing violence and poverty in their home countries. In Greece, a ship packed with more than 2,000 migrants, many of them Syrians, docked at a port near Athens. In Munich, thousands of refugees arrived by train. Germany expects to take in an estimated 800,000 migrants over the next year. As EU nations debated how to deal with the growing numbers, thousands rallied in Paris and Australia to show their support for migrants and to urge their governments to assist them. President Obama said the U.S. will accept at least 10,000 Syrian refugees in the next fiscal year. At the Vatican, Pope Francis called on every Catholic parish across Europe to take in at least one migrant family. He said Catholics were called to be, quote, neighbors of the smallest and most abandoned. In other news, the Vatican announced this week that Pope Francis has made sweeping reforms to the Catholic Church's marriage annulment process. The new law empowers bishops to fast-track the process of getting an annulment, which has long been criticized as too complicated and expensive. Francis also said that annulments should be free. Without an annulment, divorced Catholics cannot be remarried in the Church, nor are they supposed to receive communion if they have remarried outside the Church. According to the Pew Research Center, one in four Catholics in the U.S. has been divorced, and about a quarter of those say they have sought annulments. Meanwhile, in Cuba, excitement is building for Pope Francis's visit from September 19th through the 22nd, just before he heads to the U.S. Hundreds of singers and musicians held rehearsals for a massive open-air mass that Francis will celebrate in Havana's Revolution Square. Francis will be the third pope to visit the communist country. Relations between Cuba and the Vatican have significantly improved since the end of the Cold War, most notably with John Paul II's visit in 1998 and Benedict's visit in 2012. In Mecca, at the Grand Mosque, at least 87 worshippers were killed and more than 180 injured when an enormous construction crane crashed through the roof. Heavy winds were reported to have been the cause of the crane's collapse. The Grand Mosque houses Islam's holiest site, the Kaaba. The accident occurred just 10 days before Mecca's annual Hajj, or pilgrimage, which draws more than 2 million people a year. Here in Washington, Orthodox, Catholic, and Protestant leaders united on Capitol Hill in a prayer service for Middle Eastern Christians and other religious minorities experiencing violence at the hands of ISIS. The service was part of a three-day convention that was held to urge members of Congress to do more to address the plight of Christians, Yazidis, and other minorities in the Middle East, particularly in Syria and Iraq. Kentucky County Clerk Kim Davis was released after spending 6 days in jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples because, she says, that would violate her Christian beliefs. She was ordered not to interfere with the efforts of her deputy clerks to issue the licenses. Davis thanked her supporters at a rally in her honor just outside the detention center where she had been held.
I just want to give God the glory. His people have rallied, and you are a strong people.
The Kentucky case has raised many issues, among them whether appealing to religious freedom can override a person's duty to obey the Constitution. Roger Severino is a lawyer and director of the Heritage Foundation's DeVos Center for Religion and Civil Society. Barry Lynn is an ordained UCC minister and executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Barry, do I have the right to break the law in order to obey what I say is God's law?
If you're seeking a job as an elected official and you know full well what the duties and the responsibilities of that office holds, then I don't think in our legal system you can possibly be permitted to opt out of the performance of those duties by claiming that one duty violates your conscience. There are extraordinary circumstances under which people may be able to break the law and claim higher authority, but being an elected official is not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Roger?
Well, I think Barry is wrong about the law. The law actually requires religious accommodation where it's reasonable. It's part of our traditions, it's part of our history, and it's part of the law. It's specifically in Kentucky. In Kentucky, you could opt out of issuing fishing and gaming licenses if you're a vegetarian. So if you have a moral conviction there, you're respected. So why not respect the moral convictions of Ms. Davis here and provide an opt-out? All she's asking for is to keep her name and her title off the license. And the licenses could go out to same-sex couples. And I think it's a possible solution that should be pursued, and she should not have been thrown in jail. That was unnecessary and wrong.
Yeah. Of course, she chose to go to jail so far for 6 days. And the difference is there's no constitutional guarantee that you can fish or that you can hunt. But in the case of Kim Davis, what she's refusing to do is sign a paper or even allow her name to be printed on a form and have someone else sign it that involves what the Supreme Court in June called a fundamental right, the constitutional right to choose whom you're going to marry. So this is a much bigger deal and a much greater insult to the dignity of human beings than saying, sorry, I won't give you a fishing license.
Well, Roger.
North Carolina had a solution. They opted out clerks from the entire process. So people who are willing to issue licenses were issuing them to same-sex couples. Same-sex couples are receiving licenses in Kentucky as we speak. Kim Davis's name is no longer on them. Now her title is the last thing that's left. So take off the title and everybody wins. Why not pursue that option?
Are you expecting to see a lot more cases like this around the country? I mean, politics was part of what was going on in Kentucky, wasn't it? And would you, through this campaign, would you see more attempts to unite these two things?
Well, this is a result of the Supreme Court's redefinition of marriage and imposing that on the entire country. 75% of Kentuckians voted to preserve marriage as a union of one man and one woman. So these conflicts are going to naturally arise when the Supreme Court takes such a radical step. So we're going to see these.
But they will also arise because some politicians find it useful, don't they, Barry?
No, they certainly do. And, I mean, you saw just this week, two presidential candidates from the Republican Party with Kim Davis at a rally when she was released from her brief time in jail. And I think that everybody is so shocked in the Republican Party that even evangelicals are looking like, at this moment, they are overwhelmingly supporting Donald Trump. When you do that at this stage in the campaign, then others who seek evangelical votes, particularly in a place like Iowa, have nothing to do except latch on to the hottest human being, the biggest topic, and that turns out to be Kim Davis.
So, Roger, but just once again and very clearly, how do we get through this then so that in city after city after city,
sure,
the same thing doesn't happen?
So we're moving away from a live-and-let-live society to a winner-take-all society, and that's a mistake. There are ways to compromise. With Kim Davis, she could be allowed to opt out of the process completely. With the bakers and the florists and photographers in other states, they're providing services and they want to opt out of participating in same-sex ceremonies. When people could find the services elsewhere, then everybody could be happy. So we could all live and let live. And that's the society I think we should be aiming for.
Many thanks to both of you, to Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and to Roger Severino of the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We have a Lucky Severson story today about what we call the Battle of Bear's Ears in Utah. 25 Native American tribes there want the federal government to protect nearly 2 million acres of land they say is sacred. But longtime residents want at least some of the land available for development and use. Emotions on both sides are running high.
These are Navajo horsemen in a place called Bear's Ears, celebrating a most unusual event. 25 tribes coming together for a single grand cause. They want Congress or the President to create a national monument called Bear's Ears to protect almost 2 million acres of land sacred to Native Americans. This is Willie Gray Eyes from Navajo Mountain.
Back in time immemorial, Navajos and other Native Americans were tied to this land directly, deeply. There were probably 3 to 6 million people living up here before.
The area got its name because early Native Americans thought that from a distance, the two buttes rising above Cedar Mesa looked like bear's ears. Dan Simplicio is an archaeologist and a member of the Zuni Pueblo tribe, which he says occupied these lands in southeastern Utah as far back as 12,000 years.
The spiritual aspect here is the people themselves who once inhabited these areas, and there's spiritual, their presence is still here. They may be dead and gone, but we consider that part of their presence. That is an important link to the living Native people.
But local residents, for the most part, are decidedly not happy with the Bear's Ears proposal. They believe it would limit industry and access to the land. This is San Juan County Commissioner Phil Lyman.
As a commissioner, our job really is to pay the bills. We take care of, you know, keep the schools open, keep the kids educated, pay for those basic services. And other people come with these proposals of land use, and I say, have you given consideration to what that would do to the tax base?
People here are fed up with federal restrictions on much of the land that surrounds them, and 60% of that land is owned by the federal government.
Blanding is kind of an island surrounded in an ocean of federal land, and so we're very dependent on it, which leads to, I guess, probably some conflicts and things.
Conflicts are not uncommon around here, especially for Commissioner Lyman. He was recently convicted and is facing a year in jail for leading dozens of ATVers on a protest ride onto federally administered Bureau of Land Management, or BLM, land, which was off limits to four-wheelers. Lyman feels he's done nothing wrong, and the governor has offered to pay $10,000 out of his campaign fund to help pay Lyman's legal bills.
Going to jail is not what scares me. Living in a country where you can go to jail without having broken any laws is what scares me. That scares me a lot.
Lyman is not alone in the view that locals are being squeezed. San Juan County Commissioner Bruce Adams, a fourth-generation rancher, also opposes the Bear's Ears proposal, as it is, because national monument status can limit public access to certain roads. Hiking, biking, and hunting are permitted, but only in certain areas, and there can be no new industry.
We believe that the roads in San Juan County need to stay open, that people need to have access to this beautiful, wonderful land, but we just feel like maybe that proposal is just too big.
If you don't get this designation, what do you see in the future?
Probably a lot of ATV trails. As you can see, it's a pristine area. Really nature's own work. If you alter that, put a motel or something in here, that will change the whole story.
It's not easy for outsiders to understand the sacredness of this land to Native Americans. Mother Nature is not simply an expression. Listen to Jonah Yellowman, a spiritual leader of the Navajos.
Our elders, they tell us, you know, your creator will talk to you in some way every day of your life. Ours is that, you know, we talk to nature and air, water, and the sound, the breeze, and the sound of the horse or something like that. And it gives us, it kind of tells you things.
Another reason Native Americans consider the land holy is that among the cottonwoods and sagebrush are plants used for healing and ancient ceremonies, plants like Indian tobacco and datura.
A lot of their spiritual ceremonies are actually done through the ability to contact the prehistoric practitioners to come and assist in healing of people. And it's not the fact that they're medicine man per se, but they are the conduit to that type of teachings from the past. People who inhabit these areas are all still here.
Their ancestors may be here, but many of their graves are gone, dug up, and desecrated. These ruins are called Long Fingers. The site has been looted and many of the structures destroyed. Cameron Cox is an archaeologist with the BLM.
Unfortunately, these graves may have been targeted because of the artifacts they contained.
Artifacts like these, which now rest at the edge of the Cedar State Park Museum in Blanding. These kinds of objects bring big money at auction houses and are prized by private collectors.
We know there has been significant looting. In 2009, federal agents arrested 24 people, mostly from the small town of Blanding, Utah, and charged them with stealing ancient Native American artifacts from public lands, including sacred relics, even human bones from burial sites. The government said it was the biggest bust ever. Two of those arrested, including the town's only doctor, committed suicide. The rest pled guilty in exchange for probation. The people of Blanding will not forget.
You have people coming in at daybreak in full body armor with automatic weapons and black Suburbans jumping out of the vehicle, taking people out of their homes in their night clothes, throwing them face down on the lawn, handcuffing them, putting leg irons on them. Their children watching while this is going on. It's traumatic.
The commissioner seemed more upset about the SWAT team-like tactics than the guilty pleas.
No question, there were some that were fined because of the artifacts that they had collected by whatever means. I really don't know how they came up with those artifacts, but yeah, some people received fines.
I wish somebody would rent a tractor, a backhoe, and take it down to the graveyard in the city and start digging up those coffins to make a statement as to how we feel about our ancestral graveyards. Maybe that's what the type of action that it would take to educate.
I'm not going to try and defend anybody who takes a backhoe and tries to dig up a Native American ancestral grave. I think that's terrible. It's wrong. They ought to be prosecuted and brought to the full justice of the law.
Willie Gray Eyes and other tribal leaders are counting on the president to set aside Bears Ears as a national monument, much as President Clinton did in the Escalante region of southern Utah in 1996. That caused a local uproar that hasn't subsided.
That's the threat, and that's what's motivated the citizens of this county to come up with a proposal, is to help alleviate the threat that Obama with the pen can create whatever he wants to create.
We're going to leave it the same, keep it, protect it. We're going to use it the right way. That's what we want.
For now, the county, the state, and the congressional delegation are pushing hard to come up with a proposal that will keep the federal government at bay and limit the size of Bears Ears. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Blanding, Utah.
Some sad news now. Andrew Kohut died of leukemia this week. He was admired around the world for his leadership of public opinion research.
He's one of that
Cohut headed the Gallup poll and then the Pew Research Center. He believes strongly in the value to everyone in a democracy of accurate, nonpartisan polling. And he was an occasional guest and a longtime friend of this program. He was 73 years old. On our calendar, next week, Hindus around the world begin the 10-day festival of Ganesh Chaturthi, dedicated to the popular elephant-headed god Lord Ganesha. Clay figures of Ganesha are often made and immersed in lakes and rivers. And the holiest time on the Jewish calendar begins at sundown on Sunday with Rosh Hashanah, the new year. The high holidays end 10 days later with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. On the eve of the high holidays, many Jews in the Reform movement are using the first revision in nearly 40 years of American Judaism's most popular prayer book. We spoke with two rabbis, Andrew Bush and Hera Person, at the Baltimore Hebrew Congregation. They told us about the new book's diverse approach to traditional theology, including its acceptance of doubt.
In this month of Elul, the Jewish month that leads up to Rosh Hashanah, we are using the prayer book both Friday night and Saturday morning as our Shabbat prayer book to familiarize people who come to worship. We are a Jewish house of worship. Our prayer is Jewish, and yet we know and openly embrace those members of our community who aren't Jewish. And the book has to reach those different populations, younger, older, traditional families, non-traditional families, people who have doubts about God, and people who find belief in God very comfortable and easy.
We really wanted to create a prayer book that is inclusive of the full range of who is in our community today. So it is LGBTQ friendly. We're not going to say bride and groom. We're going to say a couple. We have a blessing for people being called up to the Torah, a gender neutral version. So somebody who isn't comfortable identifying by gender can still be called up, included, blessed, and have the honor of reading from Torah. The God language as well. So there are times where we do keep masculine language because we feel like it makes sense in this context, but there are other times where we use female language. There's the sort of timeless pieces, which are the traditional prayers. Then there are the translations of those. There's transliteration throughout the book, which is another kind of inclusive piece of it, because you can't, you know, it's hard to say to people, you're welcome, we want you to be here, we want you to feel included, if they can't read the text in Hebrew. We have pieces at the bottom of the pages which offer a kind of philosophical, spiritual commentary, historical context. We offer the poetry, which goes to the same, the kind of the big themes, the big ideas. We have artwork in the book. And for some people who are really visually oriented, these sort of beautiful abstract art, these shapes are going to be the same sort of thing that a poem would be, a kind of visual metaphor and another doorway into meaning and connection. And there are meditations in the book as well. There are things that are not meant to be read out loud, but are meant to allow people to kind of rest in certain places, to maybe take a moment to have their own time of reflection or time for inspiration. We embrace doubt. We embrace anger. We embrace ambivalence. We embrace discomfort. At its most literal level, Mishkan HaNefesh means sanctuary of the soul. The big eternal questions are still the same big eternal questions that our ancestors were grappling with. The nature of human existence, eternality, immortality, God. Those are timeless questions, but the ways that we connect to them are often different. Certainly our approach to religion shifts over time. Not our core beliefs, not our sort of core ethical values, our core religious practices don't necessarily change. But the way we approach them, how we live them out in our lives, and the questions we ask about them, those, I think, change.
Today we stand before the shofar to hear its voice of hope.
Kia Shevarim.
There's a mix of, you know, wanting to enable people to stay where they're comfortable and where it's familiar, but also wanting to shake people out into a new place. Because I think change comes where we're uncomfortable. if we want people to truly go through the process of repentance and all the sort of introspection and growth that you're supposed to be doing on the High Holidays, that is really about moving out of your comfort zone and into a new place.
A little discomfort's not a bad thing. The goal of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is to remind us that we need to improve and that each year we're given an opportunity to be reminded of that, and the work continues throughout the year in our actions, in our relationships, in our own thought processes.
Finally, remembrances were held around the country to mark the 14th anniversary of the September 11th attacks this week. In Shanksville, Pennsylvania, a new visitor center was dedicated at the Flight 93 National Memorial. The $26 million facility uses interactive exhibits to tell the story of how passengers and crew tried to regain control of the plane from Al-Qaeda hijackers. Flight 93 was the only one of the four hijacked planes that did not reach its intended target on 9/11. That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.